Hello, this is Alton Banks from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Angier. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored, so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Now we turn to the inside of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and we find the biz page as usual. And under the heading of Chappelle Shows comes the heading, Duke Grad Finds a Way to Shut Off Cell Phones. So Biz received a notification recently that a sixth show of Dave Chappelle's new stand-up comedy tour was added to the Carolina Theater of Durham, set for December 7th through the 10th. And like many of his more recent shows, cell phones were not permitted. Actually, they were locked up in a bag, and a Duke University alum was behind it all. In case you haven't heard, Yonder, spelled Y-O-N-D-R, Yonder is a five-year-old San Francisco-based firm with a mission to create phone-free spaces by allowing phones to be stored in pouches, locked and unable to use until tapping it on specially made unlocking bases. You can keep your phone with you, but you can't use it until you step outside the no-phone zone and tap it on a Yonder base, unlocking the pouch. Yonder, the brainchild of former Duke soccer player Graham Dugoni, is now used in various places across the U.S., such as concert venues, schools, and courthouses. Looks like Biz and its buddies won't be able to live stream Chappelle after all. And under the heading of Honored comes the article, Forbes Honors Graduate of Raleigh's Enloe High. A product of a Raleigh high school has been named to the Forbes 30 Under 30 list for consumer technology. Ride Kambura, who graduated from Enloe High School in 2012, co-founded Wildfire, a platform to communicate in real time with people nearby. While a senior at UC Berkeley, Kambura was nearly mugged on campus. He made a Facebook post about the close call to warn other students, but hardly anyone saw the post. That led him and some classmates to start Wildfire. Today, hundreds of college campuses use the app. And under the heading of Fun Photos comes the article, Pets Pile into Crabtree for Their Shot with Santa. If your holiday isn't complete without your pet meeting Santa, then now is your chance. Crabtree Valley Mall has a special pet night with Santa Claus, where your dog or cat can be photographed with the big guy for $20. The event usually draws between 20 and 40 pets, Crabtree spokesman Brian Aspel says, with the number rising as the holiday approaches. Animals of all sizes, including mastiffs, have snuggled up to Santa, and a few reptiles have made trips as well. Crabtree has one more pet night on December 16th. And under the heading of local news comes the article, Ratings Battle Sharpens, Especially in Mornings. The television ratings are in for the November sweeps period, and WREL and ABC 11 are in a dead heat in a critical morning ratings period. WREL has dominated the market for years, but ABC 11 gained ground after WREL switched to NBC in 2016 and began winning the morning. Morning news is a critical economic driver because its longer news slot offers more advertising time and because the evening slots are losing overall views. In the November sweeps from October the 31st to November 27th, WREL and ABC 11 both had ratings of 5.0 and shares of 18 for the 6 a.m. hour from Monday through Friday, according to Nielsen household numbers obtained by Triangle Business Journal. At 6 p.m., WREL led with a rating of 9.0 and a share of 18, followed by ABC 11 at 7.0 and 14. At 11 p.m., WREL had a rating of 4.5 and a share of 10, with ABC at 3.7 and a share of 8. CBS, 17, drew a rating of 0.9 and a share of 3 at 6 a.m., with 1.4 as a rating and a share of 3 at 6 p.m. and 1.8 and a share of 4 at 11 p.m. And under the heading of new owner comes the article, Raleigh Apartments Sell for a Big Price. Location is everything, it turns out. Some luxury apartments in Raleigh that are an easy walk to Carolina Country Club or nearby Glenwood Grill have sold for a whopping price. Grub Ventures of Raleigh and Styles Residential Group of Florida just sold the Carolinian, a 186-unit complex at 2600 Glenwood Avenue. Camden Property Trust of Houston paid $75 million for the property, or $403,225 per unit. The Carolinian offers studios, 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units, ranging from 600 square feet to more than 1,700 square feet. Grubb purchased the land, which had been a 28-unit brick apartment complex, in 2012 from Kip Dell Homes for $2.4 million. The Carolinian welcomed its first residents in 2017. And in a very timely article under the heading of Going Up is the article, Christmas Tree Prices Rise and the Recession is Why. It takes a North Carolina farmer about 7 years to grow a Christmas tree, and the events of 7 years ago are now making an impact on price and supply. Jerry Moody, who works for NC State University as the Avery County Extension Director, says farmers were getting only around $16 to $18 for their Fraser firs in the Great Recession. There was ample supply, and the demand wasn't as great, he says, so there were more trees than what they needed for the market. Some quit the business or cut back on production, while others consolidated. Moody has done his job for more than 3 decades and said there were 950 growers in Avery County when he started. Now, there are less than 350. But now, demand is up, and supply is down, so prices have risen. The wholesalers are getting in the mid-20s for their trees. The average price for a live tree in 2011 was $34.87, according to the National Christmas Tree Association. Last year, it reached $78. Roughly a fifth of U.S. Christmas trees come from North Carolina. The reasons are because the state's mountains are ideal for growing trees, and the Fraser firs are so desired. It holds its needles and a great smell, Moody notes. All the Frasers we have are from this area. Next, we turn the page of Triangle Business Journal, and we find the Technology and Startups page. And under the heading of Inside the Pitch, the article, Public Records Show NC Was in the Running, but Lost Drone Headquarters to Virginia. Officials called it Project Jetson, a drone company they hoped to lure to North Carolina. But after months of negotiations fell flat, the firm, later identified as Drone Up, picked Virginia instead for its 43 jobs and $130,000 in investment, opting to expand in Virginia Beach over the Triangle. It doesn't appear North Carolina got far enough along to work up an incentives package to compete with Virginia, where the company was already headquartered. But more than 100 pages of email communications provided by the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina show the state was in the game. Emails show EDPNC got involved early, first meeting company executives at the NC Drone Summit in 2018, more than a year before it made its site decision. We certainly believe that DroneUp will find the quality it's looking for in our state. Brett Helton, a business development manager with EDPNC, wrote the company on August the 9th of 2018. We have a robust, unmanned and manned aerospace, manufacturing, and other advanced industry clusters. His team sent real estate profiles of more than a dozen possible sites throughout the Triangle, but by January 2019, communication fizzled without explanation. According to the October announcement by Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, the company will be supported through what's called the Virginia Jobs Investment Program, which provides consulting services and funding to firms creating new jobs in the state. DroneUp connects drone clients with qualified drone pilots through both its app and on the web. And in a related story on the page here, under the heading of Big Number, comes the article, Precision Hawk Closes Mega Funder. Precision Hawk disclosed its latest funding round on December the 11th. A $32 million raise from backers such as Millennium Technology Value Partners, Third Point Ventures, Eastward Capital Partners, and others. When you're in a fast-growing market, you're always looking at different opportunities, CEO Michael Chasen says. Precision Hawk, which has about 100 employees at its new downtown Raleigh headquarters, will be growing, Chasen says, both through new hires and possible acquisition deals in 2020. And he sees Precision Hawk as a major catalyst for North Carolina's future leadership in the burgeoning drone sector. Despite news that one drone developer, DroneUp, picked Virginia, Chasen sees the industry growing here. He points to his last startup, Blackboard, which he estimates spun out 20 to 30 education technology startups in Washington, D.C. And also on the technology and startups page under the heading of Local Jolt comes the article, Startups' $90 million raise could boost local operation. A San Francisco company with a growing Raleigh headcount just raised $90 million with plans to keep hiring. WalkMe, a digital adoption platform and competitor of Raleigh-based Pendo, announced the raise, led by Vitruvian Partners, with participation from Insight Partners, December the 9th. The funder increases the company's total cash haul to more than $307 million. The latest round follows a $40 million funder in September of 2018, which, according to co-founder and president Rafael Swery, saw a $10 million extension. At the time it announced its last raise, the company had 65 employees locally, and Swery projected the headcount to grow by 50% to 100% in 2019. The company just moved into a new space downtown. Swery says the Raleigh headcount is now at 86, and WalkMe is planning to grow that count by nearly 50% in 2020. We did grow significantly, and we plan to continue growing here, he says. We find the area very, very well for recruiting talent. And the talent we do find is very dedicated and committed. With the planned growth, Swery is already anticipating the need to seek out new real estate in Raleigh. It's not an imminent thing right now, he says, but I'm sure it will come toward the end of 2020. According to WalkMe, by the end of 2020, nearly all of its customer-facing roles will be in Raleigh. Next, we turn to Caleb Harshberger's real estate page, and under the heading of Warehouse District, we find the Citrix building in downtown Raleigh sold for $85 million. A building serving as a divisional headquarters for a tech giant in Raleigh's Warehouse District has changed hands for a near record-breaking price. Kuwaiti investment bank Boubian Capital recently bought the Citrix building, paying $84.75 million for the 189,950-square-foot building. In the United States, the buyer's investment company works under the Exan Capital moniker. At just over $446 per square foot, the sale is just $12 shy of the region's current record of $458 per square foot set by the purchase of the Cap Trust Tower in North Hills by Preferred Office Properties of Atlanta in July. The Citrix building is situated on 1.3 acres at 120 Southwest Street and serves as the divisional headquarters of Citrix Systems. The building's seller, New York-based JMC Holdings LLC, paid $68.5 million for the property in 2014. Citrix has fully leased the building since 2014. The company is based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and provides software services to companies around the globe. CBRE's Patrick Gilday, Matt Smith, Grayson Hawkins, and Brandon McMenemy, along with CBRE Raleigh's Ben Kilgore, represented JMC Holdings in the sale. The Citrix building is one of the most unique and progressive office buildings in the state of North Carolina, emblematic of the type of space that corporations are seeking today, says Gilday, Executive Vice President at CBRE. In today's environment, real estate's being used as a recruitment and retention tool, and the Citrix building is an excellent example of this trend. Exan Capital was not available for comment. Kilgore says the rapid growth and development in Raleigh's warehouse district has led to increased interest in the area from outside investors and developers. The deal's near record pricing is a testament not only to the creative environment at the Citrix building, but also the market's available educated workforce, lifestyle, and moderate cost of living in Raleigh and throughout the Triangle market, he says. Now, moving a little farther outside downtown Raleigh, under the heading of Chatham County, comes the article, Maryland Firm Plans Pittsburgh Place Community with up to 900 residential units. The owners of a 212-acre property in Pittsburgh could build up to 900 residential units on the site. The Hall Companies of Maryland filed plans for Pittsburgh Place, a proposed mixed-use master plan community situated south of Highway 64 Business, east of downtown. The project was included in a zoning request submitted earlier this year. Plans allow for a total of 900 residential units, with options for up to 400 townhomes, 400 single-family homes, and 375 multifamily units. The plan also calls for up to 50,000 square feet of commercial space and a minimum of 53 acres of open space. The wooded tract is south of the U.S. Post Office in Pittsburgh and adjacent to the rear of Piedmont Health Senior Care property off Chatham Business Drive. According to a map of the project, Industrial Park Drive would run through the center of the development. The project is broken into four pods, which will be divided by two intersecting roads, including what is now Industrial Park Drive, planned to run through the community. The timeline and price of the project are unclear, and representatives with Hall Companies were unavailable to comment. The company bought the bulk of the land earlier this year for $4.4 million with plans to develop. If approved, Pittsburgh Place will join a growing roster of massive mixed-use developments in Chatham County. The project is nearby Chatham Park, a 7,100-acre mixed-use project led by Preston Development. And last month, construction officially began on Mosaic, which is a massive mixed-use development that will serve as a commercial gateway to Chatham Park. Now, coming a little closer, under the heading of South Raleigh, comes the article, Raleigh Developer Plans Retail Center. The firm behind a proposed major redevelopment project in Raleigh has filed plans to refit a squat warehouse property in South Raleigh into a new shopping center. Merge Capital filed plans recently to redevelop a warehouse building at 1310 South Person Street into 28,563 square feet of shopping center space. The property is currently zoned to allow for industrial mixed-use development up to three stories tall. The site is situated on 8/10 of an acre that's four blocks south of Shaw University, currently hosts a single-story warehouse, which Merge Capital bought late last year for $1.47 million. The company also owns an additional acre and a half on that block, not listed in the site plans. And under the heading of upcoming project comes the article, Briar Chapel to add apartment complex. A Raleigh real estate investment development firm has plans for an apartment complex in one of the region's fastest growing communities. Blue Heron Asset Management will build a 200-unit apartment community in Briar Chapel, a 900-acre master plan development south of Chapel Hill and led by Newland. The apartments will be spread across three buildings, each four or five stories. The complex will have a centralized amenities building. Blue Heron is thrilled to be building at Briar Chapel, where we'll be bringing the best-in-class finishes and amenities common in urban apartment projects to a more laid-back, gracious, and community-centered setting, says Kevin Wade, project manager for Blue Heron. Apartments will range from 625 to 1,600 square feet, and the company has yet to determine rental rates. Now we turn the page to reach the healthcare and education page. And under the heading of stalemate comes the article, NC Leader Says the Future is Managed Care. While the timing of Medicaid transformation in North Carolina remains uncertain, Dr. Mandy Cohen, the Secretary of the NC Department of Health and Human Services, says its fate is not in question, it's coming. Last month, NCDHHS confirmed the state's Medicaid transformation, known as Medicaid Managed Care, has been indefinitely suspended following the North Carolina General Assembly's adjournment without overcoming the budget impasse between Governor Roy Cooper and the legislature. The suspension has put the five companies tapped to take over the state's Medicaid contracts into a precarious position, having already built the infrastructure and staff needed to handle Medicaid plans. The companies now don't know when or if they will be reimbursed by the state. Reimbursements can't begin until the program launches. The contracts were awarded in February to AmeriHealth Caritas, North Carolina, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, United Healthcare of North Carolina, and WellCare of North Carolina, as well as a regional contract awarded to Carolina Complete Health. The wait and see has led some, including Republican lawmakers, to suggest the stalemate could force companies to lay off staff and put the entire plan in jeopardy. Cohen, who was appointed by Cooper in 2017, says managed care is coming. Managed care implementation is a when, not an if, she says. The question is, how long in the future is when? Cohen says her department has no better idea of when it may be implemented than private industry or lawmakers. And under the heading of raising capital comes the article, Medical Firm with UNC Roots Kicks Off $8 Million Round. After spinning out of UNC Chapel Hill several years ago, a medical diagnostics technology company has raised $3 million to continue development. Biofluidica, which first launched in the laboratory of Steven Soper, started its most recent fundraising round November 22nd, according to documents filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The company develops a platform for disease management and diagnosis from a sample blood test. The company cites clinical evidence that its platform can precisely capture and isolate disease biomarkers. Our ability to scan blood for the first signs of a disease, finding the rarest biomarkers with unmatched sensitivity, means fulfilling the promise of a true liquid biopsy, a company statement reads. We are revolutionizing disease diagnostics by bringing better diagnostics to millions of people. According to its most recent SEC document, the company offered $8.2 million in equity, selling just over $3 million. It has a remaining $5.1 million left in its offering, with no minimum investment requirement. In the $3 million raise, 18 investors participated, according to its filing. Soper is a professor of chemistry and mechanical engineering who currently teaches at the University of Kansas. And in a related article comes the heading under the heading of Targeting Tumors, comes the article Duke Study Could Aid Prostate Cancer Treatment. Research coming out of Duke University has the potential to treat prostate cancer cells that have become impervious to hormone therapy, presenting a wealth of potential therapeutic benefits as researchers press forward to battle lethal forms of prostate cancer. According to a study led by the Duke Cancer Institute, recently published in Science Translational Medicine, Duke researchers have identified a cell surface receptor essential for the survival of resistant prostate cancer cells. The study showed those cells can be targeted to halt tumor growth. We noticed in prostate cancer there are two types of cells, said Dr. Xiaoti Huang, chair of the Department of Pathology and senior author of the paper. The vast majority are luminal tumor cells, which are susceptible to hormone therapy. But a minor component of cells are neuroendocrine cells, and they are very important. They do not express the androgen receptor, so they will survive hormonal therapy. Huang and his team isolated neuroendocrine cells, which account for less than 1% of all tumor cells in early-stage prostate cancer, but become more prevalent in late-stage diseases and make up nearly all lethal forms of prostate cancer. The breakthrough is big news for the cancer world, as resistance occurs because a percentage of prostate cancer cells are completely impervious to hormone therapies, meaning that over time, the drugs become ineffective. And lastly, from the healthcare and education page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, under the heading of Surgical Products, comes the article, NC MedTechs Square Off in Lawsuit Over Bone Press Device. Two North Carolina companies are in a legal battle over a medical device. Hensler Surgical Products of Wilmington has sued Tobra Medical of Wake Forest for alleged patent infringement, false advertising, and deceptive trade practices. Hensler claims Tobra is knowingly marketing and commercializing a knockoff of its bone press, a device used to collect autologous bone graft. The device was invented by Robert Sean Hensler and a small team of inventors. Hensler founded his namesake company in 2012 around the device. Tobra was founded in 2015 by CEO Brad Collins. Hensler claims Tobra hired a third party to design its own bone dust collector in 2016. According to its court filing, Hensler became aware of the product in 2018 when a third party informed it a knockoff was being used in surgical procedures at Duke University Medical Center. Hensler claims Tobra had knowledge of the company's patent, if for no other reason than in 2017, Collins contacted Hensler and indicated he was interested in becoming a sales representative for Hensler and acquired a sample of the bone press. Next, we come to the equivalent of the cover story of this week's Triangle Business Journal. It's actually deemed a special section, and it's entitled The 2019 Business Person of the Year. That's the heading, and the article is entitled Bold Moves Shape His Drive. And it details Tom Greco. Now, with this story, there's a graphic which talks about Advance Auto Parts stock price, and it talks about the stock price over the past 3 years. And so I'm going to read to you the stock prices for the October 4th stock quote of 2016, 17, 18, and 19. So on October 4th, 2016, the stock for Advance Auto Parts was $146.54. 1 year later, 2017, it was at $94.93. A year after that, it was back up to $165.71. And most recently, October 4th of this year, $159.94. So here's the article. Tom Greco's mind is always working, whether it's an analysis of the CNB story in the background as he sips his morning coffee, or filtering comments from employees. He's strategizing, a necessary obsession when you're trying to turn around a company that for years was in a slump. Greco, the 61-year-old Canadian-born CEO of Raleigh's only locally headquartered Fortune 500 company, Advance Auto Parts, admits it's an uphill trek. The numbers are not always in his favor. He's had many, quote, tough conversations, unquote, since taking on the CEO role in 2016, and he swapped out the executive boardroom with new hires, many from his prior home state of Texas, where he ran snack giant Frito-Lay. But by truly revamping the technology fueling Advance Auto stores and partnering with one of the world's biggest retail giants, Walmart, a shift is being felt inside the company's North Raleigh offices. And he's confident bigger success is coming, and that's good for the City of Oaks, which has already been deploying his company's name in economic development discussions as it and the state of North Carolina tries to hook another Fortune 500 fish. Because of Greco's transformational call to locate the company's headquarters in Raleigh and his insistence over the past year to engage Advance Auto employees and finances with the community's charitable needs, he's Triangle Business Journal's 2019 Business Person of the Year. Greco starts each workday with a workout, either with his trainer or on his Peloton bike. But news preoccupies most of his downtime. CNBC's almost always on. the radio station is nearly always pegged to talk radio. And his retention for what he watches is impressive. It's common to hear the ever-personable Greco talking to colleagues about an idea he saw days ago, or an idea Walmart is implementing. Walmart CEO Doug McMillon, a friend from their PepsiCo days, is someone Greco clearly admires and is excited to partner with via Advance Auto. We looked at potential partnerships. We evaluated the realm of different things we could get involved with, Greco says. And the partnership, which puts its products on Walmart's e-commerce site, marks a major play, he says. Walmart, he notes, is doing things differently. It's in the e-commerce game, not just sitting on the sidelines watching as Amazon take out the industry. And if Greco has anything to say about it, Advance Auto will be too. We have to define 5 years from now, what do we think the world's going to look like, Greco says. He sees Advance Auto as housing two businesses, the do-it-yourself business that comes in the front door, and the professional business garages, where Advance Auto trucks deliver parts from its warehouses to mechanics throughout the country. That's the biggest part of our business, CarQuest, he says, a nod to the $2 billion general parts buy in early 2014 that brought it to Raleigh. We're building that out and growing that. But growth requires a cultural shift, he says. Walking through the hallways of the Advance Auto headquarters on Millbrook Road, you can see what he's talking about. Small offices, opaque walls, closed-off conference rooms. Our office is tiny, he says. It's really dated. But not for long. In nearby North Hills, a tower set to be topped out by the end of the year, we'll soon house a new open environment headquarters. Greco says it's about bringing teams from multiple offices together. Instead of having to traverse the maze of buildings on Millbrook Road, they'll take a staircase. A collaborative environment was one of his priorities when taking on the role. Another, putting a dream team in place. That's the most important part of the job, he says. We report earnings every quarter. And there's nothing more important than finding really great people you can count on. When you have superb leaders around you that are really focused on getting better, it makes a world of difference. But entering a firm in crisis wasn't exactly smooth. This was a turnaround, he says. There were lots of problems. Calling it a labor of love, he sought out people who want to win. People like Mike Miller, Vice President of Environment, Health, Safety, Sustainability, and Risk Management. Like many others on the team, Miller had previous connections to Greco. He came from Texas, where he worked at Dean Foods, and had colleagues who had worked with Greco before. Working with Tom is awesome, he says. He's a really inspiring leader. I think he's been a tremendous change agent. Chief Financial Officer Jeff Shepard was also brought on board by Greco from General Motors in Germany, and says Greco's passion is unique. It allows everybody to have a voice, and your voice is actually heard, he says. There are some leaders who give you the proverbial 30 seconds, but he really listens. And there are really no hard conversations, Shepard says. The hard conversation becomes an easy conversation because you know he's going to listen. I don't feel the pressure. Greco replaced 19 of the top 20 leaders at Advance Auto on arrival. And the new management team has caught Greco's enthusiasm for the turnaround mission, Shepard says. But it's still not easy to come in and clean house, Greco says. We didn't have very basic things that a company our size has, Greco says, pointing to a horrendous investor relations team when he arrived. We're a $10 billion company. We bought a bunch of stuff. We had a collection of things that were not well integrated. We're trying to professionalize and integrate the company. Greco says Advance Auto has gone from being the laggard of the industry to nearing the finish line. We're getting relatively close to being on par, he says. But Greco has candidly said the turnaround mission will be expensive, a take that hasn't always been met with analyst patience. How do you respond to those who say, now you've had two consecutive quarters of gross margin degradation, so how realistic is it that you will get to mid-teens operating margin over the long run, as you've outlined previously? Michael Lasser, an equity research analyst with UBS, asked in November. Greco had a long-winded answer that equates to, you have to spend money to make money. Advance Auto's new Speed Perks loyalty program, for example, has its full faith. It's intended to drive loyalty and sales in the do-it-yourself segment and accounted for 25% of the firm's DIY purchases in the most recent quarter. But those Speed Perks discounts meant a $14 million investment. In the quarter, the cost of the coupons outweighed the benefit of Speed Perks, he said on the call. He's repeatedly said these kinds of investments aren't about quarterly numbers. They're a long-term play. And he adds he's confident they'll drive the numbers, maybe not in weeks, but in months. While Advance Auto saw its shares plummet nearly 8% after the earnings report in November, the firm did disclose a 1.6% increase in net sales to $2.3 billion, its sixth consecutive quarter of revenue growth. It's not alone in facing challenges. One of its top competitors, O'Reilly Auto Parts, reported some softness in its own DIY segment. But even among those challenges, its stock price overwhelmingly outmatches Advance at $441.93 per share December 10th, compared to Advance Auto's $155.25. And AutoZone, another major competitor, was trading for a whopping $1,248.66. And while Advance Auto has tightened some of its footprint in recent years, O'Reilly's CEO Greg Johnson told analysts he wants to open more stores. We still feel like we can operate somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,500 stores in the United States, and our U.S. growth over time will continue as we approach that number, Johnson said on a recent earnings call. Time will tell if Greco will be successful in completing this transformation of a company that operates in a highly competitive marketplace with thinning margins. But the purposeful man with a quiet resilience is not apt to give in and retreat from his vision if things look bleak in the short term. Greco repeatedly says he doesn't define his wins by analyst sentiment or the day-to-day ups and downs of the New York Stock Exchange. He defines them by opportunities, such as a recent deal with Team Penske to plaster Advance Auto's logo on Ryan Blaney's number 12 Ford Mustang stock car at NASCAR races. Jason McDonald, chief marketing officer, says it's a big win, pointing out that it's not just Blaney that the firm is betting on. It's the die-cast cars that will outlive the partnership on shelves. And it's the Advance Auto parts that will be deployed in Penske race cars. And he credits Greco with personally pushing for the deal, a fact confirmed by Blaney himself, who says he had dinner with Greco before signing the deal. He's a real high-energy guy, Blaney says of Greco. I think he's taken a bigger chance on me. A lot is at stake in Advance Auto's success, and not just the company's own numbers. And the only Fortune 500 company in Raleigh, much is riding on the firm in the region. Repeatedly from Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, CEO Chris Chung, to Wake County Economic Development Director Michael Haley, developers say luring the next big fish is always on their mind. And both Chung and Haley have said Advance Auto's name comes up in conversations with top executives at relocating firms. John Kane, CEO of Kane Realty, which is building Advance Auto's new headquarters, as well as partnering with their economic recruitment agencies on their initiatives, says Advance Auto's pick of Raleigh last year was a huge deal. If you think about how many huge companies we don't have Fortune 500 companies, he says. We get very few shots at headquarters. Kane calls the HQ move that comes with more than 400 new jobs a big affirmation that North Carolina's strategy is working and a talking point that could help the state attract its next big win. Greco says his dealings with the state so far have been great and that he'd be willing to step up and have conversations with CEOs of expanding and relocating companies to clinch deals. When Greco's not working, you may find him in the Cayman Islands. That's where he and his wife have a vacation home just off Seven Mile Beach and in walking distance to some of his favorite snorkel spots. Frequent listeners to Triangle Business Journal will note that usually following the cover story, there's the business voice. And just like this week's Triangle Business Journal is a little different in the sense that it has the business person of the year, we don't have a business voice today, but we have a small business profile. And that small business profile is of the company Duda Payne. So it's entitled Making a Mark on Durham, the Dillon, and Places Far Away. In the 22 years since Turan Duda and Jeffrey Payne began Duda Payne Architects in Durham, the pair has built a reputation for large, high-end projects in the Triangle and around the world. Now, as developers around the country eye the Triangle for higher-end development, the company has had the chance to turn their attention to their home region. Duda and Payne started the firm in Durham in 1997. And built a reputation as a high-end boutique architecture firm with a premium on intentional design and transparent creative process. The pair first met more than a decade earlier when they were just starting their careers. Turan and I met in 1982 and then spent the next 15 years working together in New Haven, Connecticut, where I'm from, Payne says. We felt there was a lot of connectivity in our strength. The pair decided to strike out on their own, moving to Durham in 1997 to start their firm, with Duda acting as the design partner and Payne the managing partner. We just wanted to see if we could make a go of it, making our own work the way we wanted to do it, Payne says. We weren't sure when we started what they would be like, but within 3 months, we won a national competition to win a 1 million square foot project, the Gateway Village for Bank of America in Charlotte. The company continued to build on those early successes, with many clients returning and the partners doing the work the way they wanted to do it, with a premium placed on creativity, intentional design, and education. This includes teaching staff members and clients what the project goals are and how to accomplish them. My favorite aspect of what we do is when we finish a project and my client can tell you why a project is the way it is without me having to explain, Duda says. It shows they've been personally involved. He says this educational aspect of his job has only grown over the years, and he finds much of his time is spent teaching clients, students, and new architects what he's picked up over decades in the architecture business. A big part of our success is our willingness to share what we do and how we do it to our clients. Additionally, this means a highly collaborative creative process in which even the youngest members are encouraged to participate. We have a very unique design process here. It's very transparent. It's very open, Duda says. Young people who are brand new and ones who've been here 15 years, everyone sits at the table when we talk about projects, and we develop projects together. It's very gratifying. You're not just making buildings. You're talking about ideas. The partners say these creative processes take time. Something clients, in the age of instant digital tools and powerful modeling technology, are increasingly reluctant to give. It's changing, and we're getting less time to create the architecture, Duda says. There's a misconception that now we have all this high-speed tech, it makes designing that much faster. But at the end of the day, it takes the same amount of time. This is because much of the time spent on a project is around solving problems and talking through solutions. Something that can only be sped along so much by digital tools or new modeling software. I compare it to when you had a 35mm camera. You took your time, Duda says. Now with your iPhone, you can take 1,000 shots. But at the end of the day, it takes the same time to edit them, crop them, and figure out what story I'm trying to tell. The same amount of time and care goes into being judicious. One change the partners are enjoying is the new development interest in the Triangle. We started the company 22 years ago, and most of our work was outside the Triangle for the first 10 or 12 years. Now, so much of our work is here local, Payne says. Besides being so much more convenient for us, it's also gratifying because our employees can work on buildings and take their children and go see them, as opposed to working on a building in Dallas or the West Coast or Mexico. The firm's projects include the Dillon in Raleigh's Warehouse District and the Duke University Student Wellness Center, as well as the Advanced Auto Parts Tower currently being built in North Hills, Raleigh Crossing, 121 Fayetteville Street. It's been really rewarding to take friends over from Durham to Raleigh and go to the restaurants that the Dillon Payne says. It's rewarding to be designing buildings on our own backyard, so to speak. Now over 20 years in the Triangle, the partners at Duda Payne say they're confident the company has a long future ahead of it, even after the time comes for them to retire. We've created an employee stock ownership plan, which allows our employees to buy stock in the company, Payne says. And so we're working toward one day being a totally employee-owned enterprise and the business continuing on. When the partners in a firm reach a certain age, they either have to sell the company or fold the company. And we don't want to do that, Duda says. So we thought of this separate business model to continue the business and to really motivate the next generation and have them wonder, what's the future look like for me? Both partners say they are confident that when the time comes, their staffs will be prepared to take the reins. And we've got some really good leadership in the next generation of principals in this firm who've been with us for 15 to 18 years, he says. They're able to lead and work with clients. And from the news page of this week's Triangle Business Journal comes the article, RDU Airport Wants New Border Fence Around the Perimeter. In the name of security, Raleigh-Durham International Airport is preparing to spend millions on a border fence. Documents on file with the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority show early plans for an 8-foot-tall perimeter fence south of the airport near Umstead Park. In a video December 9th, Crystal Feldman, RDU Vice President of Communications, says it's for security purposes as well as to keep trespassers off our property. The goal is to have an initial phase with an estimated cost of $2.4 million, complete by late 2020. RDU's own board has yet to vote on the proposal, which according to documents could start accepting contractor bids as early as this week. A spokeswoman describes it as a multi-year, multi-phase project to install a perimeter fence around all airport property. We're working with state parks on the location of the perimeter fencing and intend to engage other neighbors with discussions about the proposed plans, spokeswoman Stephanie Hawko says. Hawko also says the fence design allows for access to a 150-acre parcel set aside for future bicycle trails should a party come forward to lease the land for mountain biking. Feldman says the RDU team has been in touch with the park system to make sure the fencing plan doesn't interfere with that trail access. We value Umstead State Park as well, and as we move forward, we'll make sure you have access to that great treasure, she adds in the video. Communications released by the NC Department of Natural and Cultural Resources show Dwayne Patterson, director of the agency's Division of Parks and Recreation, first called Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority CEO Michael Landguth December 2nd when he was made aware of the fencing plan. Records show Landguth returned the call December 3rd, and according to officials, the pair discussed setting up a meeting likely to happen in January. Next, we turn to the Viewpoint page of this week's journal, and as you know, there's always a guest columnist on the Viewpoint page. This week's guest columnist is Mark Murrow, who is a policy director at the Metropolitan Policy Program at Brookings. His article is entitled, How AI Will Shape All Our Jobs. Our recent analysis of the possible workforce impacts of artificial intelligence, or AI, has introduced some new twists into the future of work debate. The analysis, leveraging a novel method developed by Stanford PhD candidate Michael Webb, suggests that AI's effects may, for better or worse, have a distinctly white-collar tilt. That finding has impinged on at least one of the common views about automation. A few readers, such as the excellent analyst Jed Kolko of Indeed, have suggested that our results may muddy the water by complicating the conventional wisdom that less educated workers in struggling places are the most at risk for job loss from automation, as our earlier work on the subject has shown. But there may be less to worry about here than Kolko fears. Contrary to the concern that our findings will divert attention away from the needs of lower-paid workers, we believe it will widen the discussion instead. Doesn't it actually help if affluent workers as well as lower-income workers may be affected by automation? Evidence suggests that the U.S. political system tends to respond to the preferences of economic elites over those of average citizens. Given this sad reality, we think an expansion of the circle, while taking care to avoid any robot apocalypse rhetoric, might be valuable to the overall debate. Moreover, while AI may reach into the upper part of the wage distribution, that does not mean well-paid computer programmers and sales managers should henceforth become the central concern of our future of work discussion. On the contrary, those affluent, usually highly educated workers are likely some of the most resilient workers in the economy, and so will need less help than others. It's quite possible that many of them will actually benefit from AI's widespread deployment in the workplace. For example, as AI takes over certain predictive and analytic aspects of their jobs, it will free workers to become more efficient at creative and decision-making tasks that will remain uniquely human for the foreseeable future. In this regard, AI will make some of these already highly compensated workers more productive, likely raising their wages further. To this point, recent research by Edward Felton, Manav Raj, and Robert Siemens finds that advances in AI may lead to positive employment and wage growth for high-income occupations. While not all high-wage workers will benefit from AI's deployment, those who become displaced are better positioned than lower-wage workers. Most of these workers possess a bachelor's degree or higher, which likely equip them with many of the so-called soft skills, that's writing, working in teams, and negotiation, that are in demand across many different industries. These workers also typically have broader professional networks, which can ease the transition process for workers. Finally, high-wage workers already receive more support to navigate a changing economy. For example, better-paid workers tend to receive more on-the-job training than other workers, as training tends to focus on managerial, professional, and supervisory roles. Literature suggests that because company-specific skills and general-purpose skills are usually complementary, employers are more likely to invest in training workers who have a higher level of general skills, as they believe it leads to a greater return on investment. In view of all this, it's essential to keep our policy concern focused on the most vulnerable. To that end, the company needs to make significant new investments in supporting mid- to low-wage workers. So, while our most recent analysis has expanded the range of workers who will likely be affected by technology-driven disruption, it doesn't change the need to focus on improving America's subpar workforce policies. Our analysis makes it clear that when it comes to navigating the future of work, we're all in this together. It's time to make sure our policies truly help all, especially the most vulnerable among us. Now we come to the editor's notebook for this week's Triangle Business Journal, and the editor has written an article entitled, We Selected Greco as Our 2019 Business Person of the Year. Just like every year, it started with a list of names in late fall. From banking to commercial real estate to professional services and higher education, reporters and editors of Triangle Business Journal put several names on the table, with the hope that every name would be vetted to its fullest by comparing the individual's accomplishment during the year and coupling that with their influence and commitment to the community in 2019. Discussions and deliberations went on for hours on certain days in October and early November, as we talked about revenue, employee growth, local board actions, capital expenses, and several other topics. In the end, Advance Auto Parts Incorporated CEO Tom Greco stood out for a variety of reasons. It's not that Greco has had an amazing year in terms of the company's stock market performance. In fact, one could argue, compared to its fiercest competitors, the growth curve was far less dominant. But what Greco is doing requires time and acceptance from his team, and the numbers show he's getting both of these. Greco is putting AAP's business model on its head. Think of it as changing the way you target customers, engage with them, upsell them, and build your source of recurring revenue by luring them to your retail shop more frequently. But most importantly, he's using technology and predictive analytics to perform the heavy load of retail management. There's little doubt Greco is successful in mastering that change, but the cost element associated with implementing this reinvention of the business model is what seems to be keeping the stock price muted. Greco runs a $10 billion company, and in the past two quarters of this year, he and his team have managed to reduce the cost of revenue from $1.6 billion in the April quarter to $1.2 billion in the latest quarter. It's a work in progress, and we have to wait and see what the final results look like. What we don't have to wait for, however, is Greco's commitment to put Raleigh on the center stage of AAP's progress. The company's moving to a new building in North Hills in the spring, and it will be hard to miss Advance Auto Parts' name from the Beltline, as the logo will be plastered on a shiny new tower. AAP becomes the only Fortune 500 company to be headquartered in Wake County. Fortunately, Greco has been intentionally involved in various philanthropic activities with the American Heart Association and the United Way to create a culture of giving in his company. It's been a busy year for Greco, and he will be the first to admit that the transformation of AAP is far from done. But he's doing it all from Raleigh and relentlessly pursuing his goal to be an unmatched corporate citizen in our community with his philanthropic and cultural efforts. We can't wait to see what Greco does with AAP and our communities in the new year and beyond. And finally, this week's business survey, Pulse, asked the question, do you agree with the Panthers' decision to part ways with Ron Rivera? Now, there were only 688 responses, so the sample size isn't great, but 55% said yes. 45% said no. So it's about a toss-up between that decision. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Angier. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. So if you have any comments or questions, call us 919-832-5138. So long until next time.